All right, this is Steeler Country. I'm your host, Tony, alongside my two co-hosts, Mike and Joe. Steelers win big this week, 35-7 over division rival Cincinnati Bengals, now sweeping Cincinnati. So the Steelers even up their division record, 2-2. Joe, does this sweeping of the Bengals at all make up for the being swept by Baltimore?
No, it just doesn't make it worse. But I don't want to talk negative about the Steelers after their best win of the year.
Can we delve into that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, okay, maybe the second best.
Bigger win than beating New
England? Second best win of the year. Okay. I'll give it a second. But that was like before the last Ravens loss. So it's like I have a mental block from that point. No, this is a great win. It doesn't make up for getting swept by the Ravens. The Ravens managed to win again. So we are, locked in a tie with the Ravens, and somehow, even though all of the head-to-head crap goes out the window in the tiebreaker BS, there's a four-way tie for the AFC right now, but somehow the Patriots wind up number one seed and the Steelers wind up with a wild card.
Yeah. But we lose the division to the Ravens. It makes a lot of sense. We lose the division to the Ravens. Right, and then the three teams that are tied then haven't all played each other, so then it just goes to the conference round.
Well, there you go. That's how it happens. See? That's why you shouldn't lose to the Ravens twice.
But it won't, like, if the AFC probably won't shake out that way, you have to think the Texans are gonna lose at least one or two more, right? The Baltimore probably loses one more. I haven't seen New England's schedule, but I know that they play Denver coming up. A very dangerous Denver team no one wants to play. And the Steelers' schedule coming up is relatively easy.
Yeah, I mean, the Steelers played well in this game. They played very well. They managed to run the ball. We got to see – I mean, really, everything was successful. Even their garbage no-look wide receiver screen crap worked out for them. I think they may have scored a touchdown on one of those, didn't they? Was Mike Wallace's touchdown a wide receiver screen?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right, well, having said
he
that.
He had two touchdowns.
Yeah, two touchdowns. That was the first of two. Mike, last week you were, I think, the only one on this podcast not to buy into my hockey stick analogy that I tried to – are you buying in yet?
I don't know that –
He bought into
I don't know that I was. I didn't squared. Buy into it. It was I just I didn't understand it, and I still don't think I understand it. Anyway, I do believe that they seem to be playing better, and I think that's what you were saying, that you want them to be playing better as we get towards the end of the season into the playoffs. And really, this game against Cincinnati, I mean, every single week of the season when the Steelers go into a game, this is, as fans, this is what we expect. We expect them to play well. We expect their offense to score points and their defense to hold them and get a couple of turnovers. Special teams have some nice plays. I mean, so it was good to see. It kind of just went just as expected. I mean, there were, you know, that's what you want to happen and expect to happen. So it was good to see.
Hey, and for the second week in a row, Ike Taylor comes up with a pick. And this time, he had to leap up in the air and reach over his head and catch the ball with his hands. This one didn't hit him square in the numbers. And he came down with it. So apparently he liked the feeling of the interception last week and decided to repeat it.
Don't give him such a hard time, man. He's
I'm
a
not
good
giving
player.
Him a hard time. I'm saying for 2 weeks in a row, the guy came up with an interception. You know.
That's good.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
You know, the
it doesn't have to hit him in the hands for him to get an interception, but look, here's the other thing. Go out and vote for him. Vote for him to make
a
Pro Bowl.
He made a leaping catch to make an interception.
You know, I just did my Pro Bowl voting today, and I think I voted Ben to the Pro Bowl, I think. I think I voted Mike Wallace to the Pro Bowl. I voted Pouncey to the Pro Bowl.
Antonio Brown?
No, not Antonio Brown. I don't think I voted Antonio Brown in the Pro Bowl. He's good. I mean, look, Antonio Brown's very, very good this year, but he only did half the season's worth. I think I voted Ike. You know what's crazy about the AFC is that there's really no good safeties besides Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. So I voted in Polamalu and Ed Reed. Or, I mean, Polamalu and
– Oh, you're reluctant? You reluctantly voted in Polamalu?
Polamalu over – well, I can't vote for Ed Reed. I did vote in Suggs, but I also voted in Harrison and Woodley. No. No, not Harrison. I voted in Suggs and Woodley, not Harrison.
Really? Anyway. Why not Harrison? Is that three set?
He did. And, you know, I think that James Harrison is getting a little bit overrated for his performance in this game, and this is going to sound bad for me, my first thoughts I'm saying on the podcast, but whatever. You know, a lot of people talking about it coming out of this game, how good James Harrison played. I thought he had a decent game. But those sacks came late in the game, and I think they came after Dalton was out of the game, or he had his first sack while Dalton was in the game, and they took Dalton out, and then Gretkowski came in. Those sacks that he had were more a result of the fact that we had a huge lead. We knew they were going to throw, and we could just tee off on them. I thought the pass rush all game was good. We did a better job, though, I think, of getting to the quarterback rather than sacking the quarterback. We put pressure on them to force throws rather than actually getting sacks and whatnot. And I think, you know, a lot of that had to do with not only James Harrison, but I thought Kiesel played really, really well. I thought Ziggy Hood played well. And I'll tell you what, man, don't look now, but Jason Worlds is becoming a real force on that defense as a young guy. Maybe not ready to start just yet on a full-time basis, but when he has to come in, and he's had to come in for Woodley for a couple weeks now, he's getting better and better as we see him play. And I think to me now, when I look at this team, it's crazy that we're 9-3, right? Because this is supposed to be the rebuilding year for the Steelers. Coming into the season, the media kind of trained us all to think this defense is old and slow, and they're going to have to rebuild and retool with their young guys, you know, and kind of phase out these old guys, and they're going to have some kind of rebuilding, and maybe we'll have, you know, an 8-8 or 7-9 season. That hasn't happened at all. And it hasn't happened because we have had young guys at almost every position step up and play huge. And I think all the credit goes to Tomlin and Colbert. You know, you've got guys like Antonio Brown stepping up, Marcus Gilbert on the offensive line. You know, we lost both tackles this year to injury, and we signed Max Starks, and we get rookie Marcus Gilbert to step up. Cam Hayward's had to play on that defensive line on a rotating basis and done really well. He blocked the kick this week. And that's what I love about this team is how many different ways we're winning now. You know, one thing that's in this, and the special teams has been great, and that's what I want to say to you, Joe, is how about that special teams this year? We haven't heard on this podcast, we've had been doing it for what, 5 years now? We haven't heard one special teams rant this entire season. There's been no kick it out of bounds talk, right? I mean, this special teams has been I don't want to jinx it on the week we played Josh Cribbs, but we've been nearly flawless this year when it comes to special teams.
Well, that is how we would lose a dopey game to a team like Cleveland. And we've done it, and so the rants that followed were well deserved. That being said, I'm a fair man. And so have we given up any points on special teams this year?
I do not think so.
No, we have not. And so there's really not much to complain about. The team doesn't really play for field goals. So there's nothing much to complain about there. The team seems to be able to get into the red zone with relative ease, and then the drive stalls out. And so they're usually very makeable field goals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really not a lot to complain about. We're able to kick it into the end zone for a lot of touchbacks on kickoffs. It's not, not that many that get run back.
Yeah, run back, yeah.
So,
and punt coverage has been excellent with the two gunners, the two rookie gunners.
Oh, who, yeah. It's
Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown, and this is what we talked about. You know, it's about these late-round picks when it comes to the draft that really helps out your special teams. And these two guys, Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown, have been stars on the special teams.
I wonder, you bring up a good point, Tony, that the young players on the Steelers team – the reason that there's not a fall off as our guys are aging. I mean, think about Aaron Smith on the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this man was a monster through his career. And for the last three seasons, he hasn't been able to play.
Right.
And these last two are a rookie and now a second year guy, Ziggy Hood. And Ziggy Hood's turning into a monster now.
Yeah.
Have been able to, they've come in and filled in that role. You're talking about Worlds. We had Timmons come in just a couple years ago. We've had Antonio Brown, last season as Santonio Holmes is traded away or let go.
Yeah.
And the list goes on. I mean, I'm not out.
Yeah, I mean, there's Mundy has come in and played quality minutes when he was in there. And this week, you know, Tomlin decided to change it up. And when they play 5 DB sets, when they play like more of a dime package, they're actually bringing Ryan Clark off the field and playing Mundy only at safety in those positions.
So
is that right? I haven't noticed that.
Yeah, they started that this week.
So who are the five defensive backs then?
So you would have Ike, Keenan Lewis, William Gay, Troy Polamalu, Ryan Mundy.
Ryan Mundy instead of Clark. And so what's the justification of that?
Well, I think Clark has struggled Clark has struggled this year sideline to sideline. Yeah, I think it's speed. He's struggled sideline to sideline. You know, the speed factor is not – the pundits have not been wrong about the speed factor when it comes to the Steeler defense. Troy Polamalu is not making the spectacular plays he was once making. You know, Ryan Clark, while still a punishing hitter, isn't as good as he was, you know, playing zone defense. You know, James Ferrier, we've said, has lost a step when it comes to guarding halfbacks and tight ends out of the backfield, right? And the two linebackers, Woodley and Harrison, haven't dropped off at all, except that they've both been injured, you know? So the injuries have played a huge part in this defense. All the old guys that you would talk about, for the most part, I think all of them have missed games. Ferrier, Hampton, Kiesel, Aaron Smith was out the entire year. Bryant McFadden is missing the entire year now. Polamalu was out with a concussion at one point. I think Ryan Clark's the only guy who hasn't missed an entire game yet, as far as the old guys in the defense. But it's been the young guys stepping up that's helped this defense out.
So my question is, if the young guys are doing well so quickly that the Steelers stay on top, especially if they can pull off another Super Bowl and it starts to get obvious like it was in the 70s. Hey, these damn Steelers are back again and again and again. And all of our perennial favorites in the media and the NFL darlings are they fall off and they go away. Steelers got themselves on the map in the 70s through the draft, through superior scouting, programs to the other teams. Maybe Art Jr. has stepped it up a bit and he's finding guys that other teams aren't. I mean, I didn't think it was possible anymore. I figured, you know, the they're scouring the earth. For these players, and anybody with talent is coming looking for the NFL anyway. That'll be interesting to see if there's another change to the draft. You know, the draft was moved.
Right.
For the young people who listen to this podcast, the draft used to take place in, what was it, February or first week of March, back in the old days. And, it was, I want to say 76, 77 during the height of the parody. Pete Rozelle moved the draft back so that the other teams would have more time to scout.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Steelers are doing anything unconventional in their drafting. They're picking the guys right around when they should be picked. They're just not missing on guys. And they're able to develop talent really well. You know, there's something
I think that they
– go ahead.
That's what it is. I think they know how to groom them properly and develop them properly.
Yeah. I think there's – yeah. I mean, you can get a guy with all this talent, but if you can't fit him into your scheme, if he doesn't fit your scheme, if you can't – develop him in that role that you want him to play. You know, that plays a huge factor in a guy's success. That's why you talk about, you know, guy needs to change the scenery, that kind of thing. Let's talk about the red zone offense. We talked about that last week. What can we do in the red zone? That's been a big problem for this team. We're kicking too many field goals. We talked last week about what it was going to take, you know, maybe throwing to a big guy like a Wesley Saunders. Turns out it's just good old fashioned running the football and running hard, playing smash mouth football down in the red zone that helped us out. You've been the critic all year of the Steeler running game, and I don't want to sit here and say that the Steeler running game is back in any way, but I mean, they ran hard this week. They ran for over 100 yards. They ran the ball 33 times, most of that because they were winning the game. They just wanted to run the clock out. But it's, you know, it's nice to see them running that well, especially down in the red zone.
Well, just because you have a lead and you want to run the clock out doesn't mean that you can automatically run the football. In order to get the running count up, you have to make first downs. And so they were running successful enough that they could run the ball a couple of times and then throw the ball for a first down. I attribute it mostly to the hard running of Mendenhall and really Redmond Redmond first. When it comes to hard running, I don't, there's no Steeler that runs the football harder than Redmond. Mendenhall was running pretty hard too. And when I say hard running, I mean, they're hitting, they're moving the pile in their direction. Football is still a physical game, and, you know, being able to run the football is still going to be a trait found in a championship team. So I'm glad they could run. And I guess against the Bengals, did I hear right? The Bengals were like the number two or three team against the run, and pound for pound, they have the biggest linemen in the league. I don't know if it's a big accomplishment to run on the Cincinnati Bengals or not.
Yeah, they have one of the best defenses in football and one of the top five or six running defenses in football. So, I mean, it's encouraging to see the running game working. And, Mike, you know, we talked about it last week. You know, red zone offense is a problem. They went 4-for-4 this week.
Yep, that was good to see. And, you know, I gave Mendenhall a bad rap last week. I said that he's dancing too much, and as soon as he gets hit, he goes down. And I evaluate him and think about him. Sure, he does get hit and go down sometimes. But when he gets outside or into the second level, he doesn't go down immediately. I mean, he definitely breaks through tackles when he gets ahead of steam going and gets going. And those runs at the goal line, I think he had something to prove, because – if I remember correctly, Redmond was in at the goal line, and he was running hard, and he was moving the pile. And I think he had two or three runs in a row on the first or second drive, and then they put Mendenhall back in.
Mendenhall in, yeah.
And then Mendenhall acted like he had something to prove, and both of his touchdown runs were very impressive. I mean, the one up the middle, you know, it didn't look like anything was there, but he just squirted through and got into the end zone. And the one around the end, I mean, that was impressive also, where he really had nothing and then just cut back and found his way into the end zone. He had a couple of runs where – and he's done this a lot throughout his career, the, you know, the bouncing outside, and then he just gets a quick 10 yards and it makes it look impressive. So a little too hard on him last week, and I like the way he's running. I like the way they stayed a little bit true to the run as well. Now, with all that said, I'm looking at his stats. Mendenhall had 16 carries for 60 yards, which is only a 3.8 average. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was good hard runs in there. And Redmond had a 6.4 average, 8 carries for 51 yards. So did he have a big run? I don't remember that.
Yeah, he had a long 30-yarder. Like,
that's a 27-yarder.
27-yarder, there you go.
He broke some tackles.
Oh, yeah, he drove the pile for, like, 27 yards. It was pretty
Don't you think Mendenhall's talent is not being used to his advantage?
He said that earlier this season.
I think you're right.
The man is a fast runner. I mean, imagine – look, when I started watching football, one of the winningest teams was the Miami Dolphins, and they had specialty runners. They had Larry Zonka, who ran the ball straight up, you know, north and south. That's it. And then they'd hand off to Mercury Morris – on the outside, and you race the man to the outs around the end, right? And they pull guards and whatever they did. Yeah. Mendenhall is a outside runner. He's got breakaway speed. Why are we not designing runs to go around the end, to go outside? Why are we always running between? I know we're the Pittsburgh Steelers and we run between the tackles, mm-hmm. but we have a runner now. We drafted in a first round a runner who's got outside speed. Why aren't we using it?
I wouldn't say that Mendenhall has breakaway speed. I think he's very elusive. And I think here's how I would categorize it, right? I would say that Mendenhall is a better runner when there is a hole, right? If you can,
is there anyone who is not?
Well, what I'm saying is he is good at making guys miss, right? So you put him and a guy, right? If he can't run through a pile, right?
He's better in open space.
He'll make guys miss. So if it's him and a linebacker in a hole, he can make the linebacker miss in the hole and then go. But if he's running into the offensive lineman, there's not going to be a surge there, right? Whereas I think Redmond is better in that way. And I think they complement each other in that way. You know, you can bring
that's what Joe's saying, though.
They do complement.
Yeah. That they don't
one
use
guy
them
should
that
be running
way.
Outside.
Oh, yeah. I don't agree. Sure. I think Mendenhall said that this year. You know, he said, look, we practice to our strengths and play to our weakness.
Yeah. But you know what? The more I think about Mendenhall, he is kind of not exactly like this guy, but he's similar to like a Sproles type back, where I think that we need to get him the ball, you know, on screens and short passes and stuff. And I don't know what it is. Either it's just not in the repertoire for the, you know, he's not in the playbook on those plays, or he doesn't know how to run a pattern very well or something, because I think it seems like that they're underutilizing him in that area.
I think that he lacks the burst of a guy like Sproles.
I give you that. But what I'm saying is, why can't he just run a short, you know, 3-yard button hook or little crossing pattern, or just, you know, and he is the outlet guy sometimes and Ben hits him. But when he gets the ball in space, it seems like he can get a quick 10 yards.
Yeah, and I think another thing that does him, another thing that does him a real disservice is because he likes to use his feet so much to juke guys out on our crappy turf. You know, he's slipping and falling a lot. This happens to a lot of our guys. I think Antonio Brown would be a much better receiver, as far as yards after the catch, if he didn't have to play at Heinz Field 8 games a season. You know, maybe the same could be said probably for Mike Wallace. So, you know, our field doesn't do our guys any justice in there. There's a lot of times when we give away 5-10 extra yards because a guy slips and falls. Our guy slips and falls. All right. I think I've touched on everything that I want to say as far as this game is concerned, but I have a lot more to say when it comes to the big picture here. So do you want to move into that? Anybody else got anything for this game?
Well, let's just touch a little bit more. I mean, it was the Bengals, and it was a big game for them. They definitely needed the game for the standings and to split with us. And, you know, really, actually, if they would have split with us, that would have made it difficult for between us and them and getting a wild card, you know, if Baltimore ends up winning the division. We would have both been 8-4. And they probably would have had the edge on us because – they may not get swept by Baltimore. So anyway, it was a big game for them, and it was nice to see the Steelers come out and put them away and put them away nicely with the 35-7 win. But it kind of started a little slow. I mean, the Bengals had a touchdown call back and then the field goal call back and then the block field goal. And so it kind of, you know, snowballed on them, and we had the big 28-point, what was it, second quarter? So I don't know. I mean, it was a nice statement game for the Steelers, which, you know, I think this leads into the big picture, but it was nice to see. And the Steelers, especially their offense, what they played, you know, under the bar, as Tomlin would say. And so they came out with something to prove, and they did.
What do you think about the Steeler defense right now? Or do you guys see this defense as being a traditionally Steeler-like dominating defense? Does it feel that way?
I think it's going to get there, but it's not. It doesn't strike me as a dominating defense yet. No, I think it's got all the parts, but I think there's either guys that, you know, need more time in the lineup, and we need to get some guys back and back to full strength.
Yeah, and I don't feel that way either yet. I remember, like, in the 90s, when the defense came on the field, man, I was excited. I thought something great was going to happen. There's going to be a turnover, a sack, a fumble. I mean, it was just always fun when the defense got on the field. And now, I mean, the defense is playing well, and it's very efficient, but it's just not exciting yet. And it's not that, you know, dominant defense where you almost know that the other team's going to go 3-and-out because your defense is so good. We're not there yet. But I do like what I see on a lot of these third downs and being able to get off the field. And even when they do catch a pass on third down, our guys are right there. So, you know, we're not giving up big plays. There's very rarely is there a, you know, cross up where a guy's wide open because the safety and the cornerback miscommunicated, things like that. So they're playing solid.
Yeah, I think that they are quietly becoming a dominant defense. I think one of the things that makes it seem like they're not so dominating is the fact that to this point, well, really to 2 weeks ago, they were not getting turnovers at all. It was just completely scarce in that department. That has changed in the last couple of weeks. You know, we're getting intercepted. I think the secondary's playing a lot better as far as being ball hawks out there and making plays. They're playing solid football as far as defending against the pass. Don't get me wrong. We're the second best pass defense in football. But as far as making plays and getting turnovers, you know, I think that stuff is starting to turn around as we said it would. And this is the time when you need it to turn around. As you make the playoff push, This is when you need that stuff to turn on, and it is. And so, yeah, like you guys said, I think Harris, you want to see, first of all, this defense relies on great pass rush. And those great pass rushers are Woodley and Harrison. And when those guys are rushing the passer, it opens up everything else, right? It opens up Palomalo to go out there and be crazy. You know, and it allows we can bring Timmons in on some blitzes. We can blitz corners. We haven't seen those two guys play together since Houston. You know, the loss to Houston was the last time those two played together. So it's been a while. And I like that Woodley was smart enough this week to say, hey, you know, my hamstring is not 100% right now. I don't want to play an entire game. I just want to get out there, get the feel of a game again, and then get out of the game. And he did that very early on. I think he only played one or two series in the game and then let Worlds come in and take over. And he's probably going to do that again. Tomlin said they're going to work him on a pitch count again against Cleveland. So they're going to ease him back into it. And I like that. You know, you want Woodley at 100%, not necessarily now. You don't need to go out there and give 100% today. But, you know, when it comes time to maybe face Baltimore for a third time, Woodley needs to be out there. Cause I think he was the difference last time and he can be the difference the next time. So.
Yeah. If you come back on a hamstring too early, that may take you another 3-4 weeks. I mean, if you blow it out again because you came back too early, that's bad. So to ease it back in is the right way to do it.
And that's the other thing about this young, you know, the young players in this defense. If Worlds is not out there playing at a high level, which he is, then probably we may, you know, force Woodley out there, or Woodley may force it because he knows that he needs to contribute there because there's not a guy to step in anywhere near his level. But Worlds is stepping in there and playing really, really well. So, you know, we can afford for Woodley to take some time off and rest. I like that.
Hey, you know, I'm always the conspirist.
Okay.
Mike talked about how exciting it was when the defense used to come on the field. And it was in the 90s. It was. I mean, we had a badass defense. And, you know, it's not that way. It's not that you don't get that same feeling about the defense now. It's not as exciting as it was. And I kind of think part of that is that the physicality of defense is just gone. And I wonder how much that, well, it's true. Come on.
I'm just saying, we talk about this a lot. We talk about this a lot.
Well, we don't have to talk about it right now. I'm just saying, if you're wondering why defense isn't as exciting as it used to be, is because the rules have changed. Our guys have been fined. Our guys have been, you know, haven't been suspended, but they've been fined. They've been penalized. They've, you know, all this crap. And so defense is played differently than it used to be played in the 90s and before. And so that's, you know, but it's true. It's not, you don't get that same feeling like, oh man, here comes my kick-ass defense. I wonder what's going to happen next. I mean, it is fun. They still get to the quarterback and they still create turnovers and havoc. And that's a lot of fun to watch when they're doing it. I know they're holding back. Some of these guys are holding back. They have to be.
And, you know, Joe, I don't know if it was really the big hits and everything that were so exciting. I mean, it was the sack fumbles and turnovers. And I think that may have been a lot of the zone blitz defense was very new back then, and teams didn't know how to handle it. And Dick LeBeau was just that much ahead of all the offensive coordinators. And he was just causing havoc, especially against these quarterbacks who were not the elite quarterbacks. I mean, they had so much trouble against this, that defense of the 90s. But today, all teams do this zone blitz thing. And so all teams are ready for it. So I just think that, you know, that's part of it, is that we're not as dominant, or we don't have that much advantage over the offense like we used to.
We're not running as exotic a blitz scheme as we normally do, because this year – the defense is not about beating, you know, is not about punishing, you know, the Andy Daltons or the Tyler Palkos or the Blaine Gabberts of the world. It's not about playing a style that, you know, 100% of the time I'm going to beat all those guys. It's about playing a style that can shut down what Tom Brady wants to do and what Aaron Rodgers wants to do. You know, when it comes time for us to play those guys again in the playoffs, it's going to be a very different story than it was last season. And the knock on this defense this year has been, well, you know, they're a little more susceptible to the run, and they're, you know, they don't cause turnovers and all of this. And all of that is true. But when it comes time to play the big game against Tom Brady and the big game against Aaron Rodgers, I don't think any of us are going to be as worried about our defensive matchup as we were last season, because of the scheme that LeBeau has inserted for this season, the man-to-man, you know, tough in-your-face defense that we're going to play against these guys. And we're not afraid to get, you know, right in your number one receiver's face, and jam at the line every time and force you to put it in there, in, you know, in tight space, or Lamar Woodley and James Harrison are going to be breathing down your neck.
And we're, I like that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I like that, but I am worried about that. I mean, it worked against Brady the first time, but you're always open to the deep pass and just getting burned, and that's a quick six, or the pass interference down the field.
Right.
So, you know, I'm sure that the offenses are going to be ready for us to play defense like that. So that's going to be interesting when it comes time to play the elite quarterback.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it's physical like that, it's not – you can't really scheme your way out of it that easily.
Right.
Because it's just brutality. That's right. All it is.
Right.
So, and you know, it is something to look forward to. And I'll just say this. I know we're not talking really, you know, around NFL, but to me, if the Steelers are going to be in the Super Bowl, it's either going to be against the Packers or the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really for us, as far as who we play, it's 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other.
Yep, absolutely.
Same damn thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing is like, you know, the Steelers defense is built around physicality. It's about getting in your face and playing physical defense. And normally we do that with running we stop your running game and we blitz your quarterback from all sides. And if you don't get the ball out really quick, you're going down, right? But good quarterbacks against us never have to face that defense because they're able to get the ball out really, really quick. Kurt Warner did it in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady has made a living on doing that to us. Aaron Rodgers did it to us in the Super Bowl. Our defensive style does not work against the better quarterbacks in the league. The quarterbacks were able to get the ball out quick and play that style of football. We've rearranged it this way to now we are going to play a physical style of football against you. It may not be that we're going to hit your quarterback on every play, but we're certainly going to hit your receivers on every play, and we're going to adjust their timing and their routes. And that's, you know, I'm so excited. I can't wait. And we're 9-3 now, so we can start talking playoffs because we're all but guaranteed a playoff spot now.
I'm with you too. I mean, don't get me wrong.
There are no four-loss teams, right? It goes from 9-3
to right to 7-5. Yeah.
There are nobody's 8-4.
No one's 8-4.
All right. So yeah, I mean, we're
there's no 6-6 either.
Yeah, I know. There's another drop off after that.
Hey, I don't know if you're ready to take a break, but let's take a break. Call me back because I have a bad connection.
All right. Yeah, we will.
Is it okay?
Call Mike back and get back to you right after this break. Steeler Country. Guys, before we continue, I forgot email bag segment this time, and I want to read two emails from the same guy because I did not read his email last week on the podcast. I feel bad, so I'm going to read both of them. He sent one in this week and last week. I'm going to start from last week. All right. He said, I just wanted to give you guys props for a great show. You guys talked about a lot of good Steeler stuff, like the past defenses and other Steeler past performances. It was just a fun show. Speaking of the past, great Steeler quarterbacks, remember the good old days of Todd Blackledge, David Woodley, who almost won a Super Bowl with Miami, and even the awesome Kent Graham makes you love Big Ben all the more. And I have to say, I have really fond memories of Kent Graham because Kent Graham was the quarterback when I was in, like, I don't know, freshman in high school, maybe. The Steelers were 9-7 that year. That was 2002.
Was it that late?
2000, maybe?
I was thinking the late 90s.
Yeah, it was 2000.
That was Cordell, though.
Yeah, it was Cordell. Yeah, because Kent Graham got signed and beat out Cordell for the starting position, right?
That was probably 2000 or 2001.
He played the first quarter of the opener, and then he got benched.
Kent Graham?
No, that's a different guy.
Yeah, that's Jim Miller.
Oh, that was Jim Miller.
No, here's how Kent Graham's career goes, right?
I don't remember Graham.
Yeah, Kent Graham.
Blonde hair.
Opening day, this is the last season of Three Rivers, okay? Opening day against the Ravens, we open. We get shut out 26-0.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
That's Kent Graham's first game. I actually didn't hate Ken Graham after that, though. I thought he actually did kind of okay, even in a shutout. Then the second game of the season, we go at Cleveland, right? And we lose because the idiot gets sacked on the last play of the game. We had no timeouts. All they do is throw the back of the end zone. We'd have kicked a field goal and either gone to overtime or won or something. No, we had to been, it would have been going to overtime because we were throwing the ball into the end zone to try and win the game. And the idiot, you know, they used to call him, cement shoes because the guy just could not move in the pocket. Yeah. And so then he gets sacked in that game at the end. We lose. And then they, and then, Cordell starts the Raiders game, right? And the Raiders that year, this is like the, this is the, what was the Raiders quarterback?
Rich Gannon, 2002.
Rich Gannon, yes. This is the Rich Gannon-led Raiders. So they're good. This is Gruden.
This is the fifth down?
Yeah, yeah, this is Gruden. This is the fifth down, yes. This is fifth
this
down.
This is an unforgettable story.
This is what happens in this game. Cordell plays in this game, and Cordell playing with something to prove is very good. He played really well, but he got knocked out of the game right before halftime, right? And Kent Graham comes in and throws a pick six, like right away. Huh. Right, right away. We're like, we're winning the game. It's, everything's looking good. Ken Graham comes in, pick six. Oh shit, here we go. Cordell comes out in the second half, and everyone's thinking, well, he's not going to play now. You know, Ken Graham's going to play the rest of the game. Looked like a bad injury. No, Cordell comes out and toughs it out in the second half. Plays the entire game, and the Steelers go on to win that game. And then the Steelers.
Well, yeah, because well, tell the story.
Oh well, yeah, right. Because then, so we have the lead like most of the game, and then at the end of the game. The Rich Gannon has the ball. He's driving down the field, and he spikes it on fourth down. And he goes to the refs and he goes, "No, no, no! It said third down. It said third down. I didn't know it was fourth down."
He's looking at the down marker, and he's insisting that when he looked over there, it said third down.
Right.
They changed it late or something. They tried the homeboy.
Right.
Tried to fool him.
Right.
Yeah.
So he wanted a fifth down, and the ref said, "No, thank you."
We call that the fifth down game. Rich Gannon.
Yeah.
Made it famous.
And this was oh, go ahead.
Well, do you remember? Are you, do you remember all these games from memory, or are you looking this up now?
No, the fifth down is on.
I remember from memory. I'm looking it up right now.
Even the first two games.
It was not. That was not the Raiders. When the hell did the Raiders happen?
That's pretty good, though. I don't remember that season very much. The 2002 season. How did we end in that season?
We went 9-7.
Did we make the playoffs?
Did we make the playoffs? No.
Is that the season that we beat Cleveland in the playoffs when we were way down and came back?
No, that was a 10-5-1 year.
That was 2003 then.
Yeah.
No? Or I can't remember that one now.
Wait, this is the
– getting too old. It's all mixed up.
The Raiders thing did not happen – or happened, but it didn't happen when I thought it did. It didn't happen in week three.
Anyway.
That happened, but it happened way later in the year.
Yeah, that – let's – we should move on. But, I mean, yeah, those quarterbacks, Kent Graham, Tom Zach – who else was in there? Woodley back in the day.
There was Stout. Malone. Woodley.
Who was the quarterback? Was there a quarterback between Malone and Bubby Brister?
Would have been, well, that would have been.
I think it just went Malone to Bubby Brister, right?
Well, Malone and Woodley kind of shared time, and then I think we got Bubby after that. I don't think there was anybody else.
One thing that frustrated me, because Bubby came in and he was a.
He was
a big fire plug, and he was, you know, he could throw the ball 80 yards, it seemed like, and he was willing to do it. And it looked nice spiral. And the thing that frustrated me was right when Bubby started getting his starts and started coming in, and maybe it was his rookie year, I can't remember, but it seemed like Lewis Lips, who was a great receiver, you know, probably one of the most underrated receivers ever, even in Steeler history, I think he retired, like when Bubby just started either starting or coming into his own, and so they never really played together. Or maybe they did like one season. No, you know what? I'm totally mixing this up. You're gonna have to edit this. I think it was John Stallworth retired like in 80s. He retired right when Bubby started.
Yeah, that is true.
Is that what happened?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's and because Bubby and Louis Lips played together and threw a lot. You know, they connected on a lot of passes. But yeah, it was Stallworth that he kind of hung around. You know, probably too long, and then right when he decided, you know, there's just nothing left here with these quarterbacks.
You guys nailed it on the Bubby Brister to Mark, or the Mark Malone to Bubby Brister transition. That is exactly how it went down. It went from Bubby Brister, right, or from Mike Malone right to Bubby Brister. Although there was like Bono was in there, but I think that was a strike season. So
that was
strike.
That's right.
Bono but then was we, playing for the 49ers.
But we kept him, or either we kept him or the 49ers picked him up after the
49ers got him.
Yeah.
He didn't stay on the Steelers for long. No.
So,
he threw a pick six once and Berman said, and Bono throws an interception and I ain't got you, babe.
Tackle. How do you guys remember the Tony Maddox era?
Maddox came in, you know, we were starving for a quarterback for a long time.
Right.
And Maddox came in and, you know, the league was going more and more pass and, you know, we couldn't pass the ball. We didn't have a quarterback that could put together a 2-minute drive.
Right.
You know, since Bradshaw left the game, we really just never had a quarterback.
Well, Cordell was up and down and then
Cordell, right.
He was
Cordell,
down. I mean, he couldn't do it.
Well, this is coming off.
We had O'Donnell that, you know, in the big game threw the two picks
right.
instead of driving the team into victory.
Right.
You know, O'Donnell who drove the team down the field and couldn't put it in the end zone in 94 for a Super Bowl berth. So, you know, we had O'Donnell. We had Bubby that never really got firing on all cylinders. So when Tommy Maddox comes off the bench in relief of Cordell, he lit it up. I mean, he really lit it up. He had about a season's worth, but it stretched over two seasons. It was like at latter half of one season. I don't know the years. It had to be, well, it was right before
it was 2002
Ben
or 2003.
It had to be right before Ben.
But 2003 is not a good year.
His second season, he fell off.
Right.
Because he got hurt, remember? He laid on the field for 6 minutes, didn't move.
He got a terrible concussion in a game. He was never the same after that.
Or paralysis.
Had a spinal injury. He had about
10 or 11 stellar games.
I don't know if I'd call them stellar.
That's how I remember it, and it may just be comparing him to what we were used to.
To Cordell. Let me give you a quote that Hines Ward said. Hines Ward said when Tommy Maddox was going to start and Cordell was benched, he said, "You better get your head around because that ball's coming out quick." Which was kind of a slam on Cordell because he just basically, I guess, you know, wouldn't throw the ball on time.
Right.
And so Hines, you know, he told the receivers, "You better get your head around because that ball's coming out." He ain't afraid to throw it.
What's interesting about the transition from Cordell to Tommy Maddox is it really wasn't Cordell so much on the downswing. We had just played in previous to Maddox coming in the AFC Championship game.
2001.
2001, we made it all the way to the championship game. That was the year where, you know, Bettis got hurt, and we brought in Zeroway and Fuamatu Maafala, and they played, you know, they played great down the stretch. We were able to beat Baltimore in the playoffs. Everybody was scared because remember that was the game that Bettis is supposed to play that game, and then right before the game, he gets a shot, and it's like the shot is administered incorrectly, and so he couldn't play.
In his leg. Yeah.
Yeah. So he couldn't play. So it had to be Zeroway and Fuamatu Maafala. And now, you know, everybody's freaking out because, what are we going to do? We can't have Bettis. So we can't win. You know, you can't win with Amos Zeroway against Ray Lewis and the vaunted Ravens defense. This is the 2001 Ravens defense.
Right,
they won a Super Bowl the year before. You know, this is 1 year removed from the greatest defense of all time to some people.
And Zeroway ran over Ray Lewis for a touchdown.
There is a great picture online of Zeroway running over Ray Lewis. So we go on to beat Baltimore in a game that everyone thought we had no business winning because this defense is so good and we have no Jerome Bettis and it's Cordell Stewart, blah, blah, blah. Right? And so then we play the 2001 Patriots. Now, the 2001 Patriots are nobodies, right? This is Tom Brady in his first year. We hurt Tom Brady in, like, the first play of the game. So now we're not even facing Tom Brady. We get Drew Bledsoe.
That's so bad. This is one game removed from the tuck.
Yeah, this is one game
removed. These guys should be dead.
Right.
And they're still playing. They're still alive because of the tuck rule.
Right.
The week before.
We should have been at Oakland probably, right?
Yeah, we should have been at Oakland. Yeah, absolutely. And the Steelers have every chance to win this game. They're staying in it tough, even though – there was a punt return for a touchdown and a blocked field goal. Is that how that went down?
Yep.
Blocked field goal for a touchdown, for sure.
And a punt return.
And a punt return for a touchdown.
Yeah, it was two special team scores.
Yep. And they still...
Yeah, so for everybody that wonders why I'm so bitter about special teams that suck ass, there's your Super Bowl.
Cost us a trip to the Super Bowl.
Missed to the lowly ass New England Patriots who are only alive by the dust off of a.
But,
hey, can I just interrupt you real quick? Because while you're talking about special teams in the playoffs, there was also a 1993 team that was playing the Chiefs in Joe Montana's maybe his last year, second to last year, where we had them. And all we had to do was punt the ball and play defense. And you know what happened? And we had the lead. I think we were up by 3 probably. And we go to punt the ball and it gets blocked and they recover at our 10-yard line. And it took them 4 plays, but on 4th down, Joe Montana throws a touchdown pass and they win the game.
Yes, I have.
You remember that?
Memories of that game.
Another special teams playoff gaffe.
He almost downed it in the, oh my God, he almost downed it by safety. Here's what I take out of that 2001, and this is why it's so interesting that Tommy Maddox goes to start the next season. Cordell Stewart threw 3 interceptions that game, including the last 2 drives the Steelers had in that game end in Cordell Stewart interceptions.
Plus 1 in the end zone.
Yeah. So Cordell had played well the previous season. This is a, you know, we have Plex and Hines Ward as our wide receivers. We still have Bettis. And yet in 2002, after losing 2 straight to open the year, to New England and Oakland, and really not because of the offense, but mostly because the defense got exposed.
That was the beginning of the exposure, right?
Yeah, it's beginning of.
Oh, that was the first of the spread offense.
The spread offense, right. Yeah.
Right.
Right. So Cordell gets benched after Oakland.
I remember that.
And then in comes Tommy Maddox against Cleveland, drives them right down the field, gets the field goal to win it in overtime. And so begins the short-lived Tommy Maddox era, which was fun. And I think that it might, you know, the Tommy Maddox era might not have ended after just 2 seasons if he hadn't had that injury against Houston.
I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
He was totally different. He couldn't play anymore after that.
Man, one of my funnest games was that, we've talked about it here before, but that playoff game against Cleveland.
Oh, absolutely.
In 2002, was it?
2002, yeah.
That was fun. Back and forth. We were way behind. We had to convert 4th downs, and then Tommy Gunn and the team won it in the end.
And I know it's not a fun memory, but, you know, that game against Atlanta that year, against Vic.
Ended in a tie.
You know, Plex catches it on the 1-yard line as time expires in overtime. That was a pretty fun.
On a Hail Mary.
Yeah, on a Hail Mary. That was fun.
What a year that was, because the Steelers missed the Super Bowl that year. I didn't remember that it happened this way, but in an overtime loss to the Titans, is that right?
Oh, do you not remember what happened in this game? There's a story behind this game too.
On the field goal, right?
On the field goal. Oh, we're in this game the whole way, right? And our offense just can't put it together. It's 31-31 for what seems like ever in this game, right? And the offense just can't drive down. They can get to midfield, but they can't get the field goal range.
No, this is an AFC championship game.
No, it's divisional round.
Oh, division. Oh, I see. Well,
is it division?
This is 2002.
Yeah.
It was an AFC championship.
So who won the Super Bowl in 2002? Was that was Tampa beat the Raiders?
2002 is Tampa beat the Raiders, yeah.
Oh, that's what it was.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Anyway, go ahead.
So, Tennessee gets the ball back with like a minute to go or whatever, and they do drive down the field, right? And they drive right down the field, and they're at like the 1-yard line or something, right? And so we iced the kicker or whatever. It's like, yeah, we're going to lose.
I don't know if it was that short, but go ahead.
It was short.
Oh, I remember.
It was
this.
Short. It was
I know
really
what
short.
This is now.
He misses, and he like flops because one of our guys dived, you know, like.
Brushed him.
Yeah. And he flops, and they call it. They call the penalty.
And they let him kick it again,
and he makes it.
And Cowher went.
And he says, I should win an
Oscar.
I should win an Oscar.
He said, I may go into acting after this, is what he said in the postgame.
Yeah. The NFL didn't like him saying that. Yeah. Cowher was going ballistic, wasn't he?
Oh, my goodness. Cowher had some great moments as a coach.
Cowher went ballistic? I don't remember him ever being ballistic.
The in-your-pocket ref?
In your pocket ref. If you guys don't know in your pocket ref, one of the great Cowher moments, one of the great really Steeler moments is when, you know, there's always explanations for stuff. The refs, you know, you get angry at the refs because they suck, right? So in this particular game,
it was against the
Steelers
Vikings.
Get called for having 12 men on the field. And
on a
they
field
don't,
goal attempt.
What was that?
It was on a field goal attempt.
A field goal attempt. Okay. So
and they missed the field goal, and they got a retry.
Because the Steelers had 12 men on the field, and Cowher is arguing profusely. I believe that ref got a Cowher shower. If you don't know what that is, imagine when Cowher used to yell a lot, high volume, that, you know,
yeah,
you could get a shower from that.
Yes.
Well, in any case, what was it? Like, it was maybe a minute or two later, a couple of plays later, Cowher runs onto the field.
No, it's going to halftime.
That's what happened. So it's just a minute later, though, or something.
Yeah.
Right, onto the field, catches that, the head ref, the white hat guy, and shows him a picture. It's a printout. Now, it's a thermal printout. It's not like we have today. It's a thermal printout, and he shows him the sky shot of the field. There's only 11 Steelers on the field, and the guy won't look at it. So Cowher takes the picture, the thermal paper, and shoves it in his shirt pocket.
Awesome. Just a great moment.
It didn't go in the first time. He had to, like, do it
twice. He had to, like, shove it in there.
Yeah,
it
he had to great. Do a double stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And the funny thing about that was, I mean, that was 3 points that he was, you know, he was pissed about. And I think we went on to get blown out in that game by a lot.
You know, the refs have not been nice to the Steelers, though. They also – we also had – the idiot who called it wrong when
Bettis called – that was a Thanksgiving game.
We're going into overtime against the Lions.
Playing against Detroit.
Yeah. And this is a bad because you know what? We lost every game after that this year. We missed the playoffs
because
of it. But
we were 9-2 and went 9-7 or something like that? Or 7-2? I can't remember.
It was like 2000 or 1999.
We lost five games straight.
We lost a lot of games straight.
It's probably 99. But that's because Bettis said heads tails.
I don't think he said heads tails. I know you say that he said heads tails, but I don't think he
said that. Could see him and hear it.
People say that he said that.
I think he just said tails, and the guy's like to call his heads, and Bettis laughs at first, like, haha,
that's funny.
And then you see his hands go off, like, what the hell's going on? Like,
what he means heads.
Yeah, I said tails. And like, no, the call was heads. No, the call was tails. So they call that wrong. Now, the Lions that year were terrible, as the Lions happened to be. So we shouldn't have even been in overtime against the Lions to begin with, but, we were, and we ended up losing that game. And we were 7-4 at that point going into the game. We were 7-4.
Okay. And we ended up 7-9 that season.
Ended up 7-9.
Lost five straight games. And that's a good way to ruin a Thanksgiving Day meal.
Oh. Just
losing in overtime.
Yeah. Well, Mike, how do you feel about the Steelers playing on Thanksgiving? We've only done it, what, once or have we done it twice?
I know we definitely played the Cowboys and lost to them in the Michael Irvin days on Thanksgiving. Okay. I remember that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that one and the Detroit one. I don't remember it. Obviously, it'd be Dallas or Detroit. It wouldn't be anyone else.
Right. Well, I guess you could play that
night game.
In that third night game. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd prefer not to play just because, you know, I'd rather just sit back, eat, enjoy the games and not have to worry about how the Steelers are going to play.
Right. I don't really like Thursday games in general. You know, I know the NFL, it wants to,
season long.
Yeah, they want to have like a season long Thursday night package, which, I mean, it's great for their bottom line. Anytime you can do another TV deal, that's just money in their pocket. But I don't know, for, you know, teams having a short week like this, you don't, normally Thursday games are not well played games. You don't have enough time to prepare for the team. You know, there's not enough film study. The game plans aren't as fleshed out in a Thursday game. I would rather not play. I mean, I like the idea of, like, to me, only Thanksgiving, because it's such a tradition at this point, would be the only Thursday games that we play. And so that leads us right into this Thursday's game against Cleveland. Joe, I'll go to you first. Give me your thoughts on a short week in Cleveland and the Steelers' chances in this game.
You know, I mean, it's a road game, right? We're playing in Cleveland.
No, it's at home.
Oh, it's at home? But I still, we'll probably win the game. But, when you play in Cleveland on a Thursday night, you know, forevermore, you know, I would say burned in, but it'd be more appropriate to say frozen in time and frozen into my brain is the 2009 trip when it was like 5 degrees outside. The football was like a frozen ice cube. And, we lost like a 9-6 game or something to the freaking lowly ass Cleveland. They were worse then than they are now, actually. And we lost that game. Of course, we lost so many games in 2009 that were inexplicable.
Right. But that was the one where we all said, oh, no, this is the one we turned it around. We're definitely going to turn it around right now. This is it.
That game was explainable, though. Didn't Ben sit out that game because of concussion?
No, Ben played that game.
Oh, he did play the game, but I don't remember that. But that was explainable because we kept going five wide in the freezing cold rain for no reason.
Yes, we did.
So I think the Steelers win this game. They win it easily.
Score?
I mean, I watch the Browns play every week. They're pretty terrible. Their record is actually, they're probably worse than even their record indicates.
Ooh.
They stole a game from the Miami Dolphins earlier in the year. You know, that's one where they were dead to rights. I don't know how the hell they wind up winning that game. But, I expect the Steelers to win, you know, not as big as they did Cincinnati. You would think that they would, but I don't think we're going to blow them out as bad as Cincinnati. I'll say the Steelers put up 24 and give up 10.
Mike?
Well, I'm going to do the $1 to you, Joe. I agree that it's,
23-9.
Yeah. I think it's going to be easy. I watched some of the game last week, the Browns playing the Ravens, and I was hopeful that they could put up a fight, but they really couldn't. They don't seem like they have any reason to play. Colt McCoy really hasn't improved much this year, if at all. And Peyton Hillis is. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I kind of feel bad for a guy like Josh Cribbs. I mean, he's a talent. I mean, if he was on one of these contender teams, he would be a star in the NFL. I mean, he's that type of guy. But
absolutely.
He's not even – no one even thinks of him. So I just see us – I see us picking up right where we left off, and I'm going to say 31-10. And I'm going to – and while I have the floor here, I'm going to say that I do like the Thursday night games, and I do hope they go for the whole – you know, the whole season, not just half the season. And just because I like football. Now, the one thing that I don't like about it is I don't like having a full set of games on Sundays. So as long as they take away a 1 o'clock game and they still have at least, you know, 4 or 5 4 o'clock games, I think that would be good. But I don't like when there's only 3 4 o'clock games.
No, rather than Thursday night games, I'm not a big fan of Thursday night. It's taken me like – how many years are they doing this now? Like 4 years? It's taken me – the whole 4 years to even sort of remember that there's Thursday night game once in a while. So I'm not thinking football on Thursday as far as I got to watch games. And then, you know, you got to stay up late. You got to go to work on Friday. It'd be a lot better if they, like this coming weekend now, they used to do this when I was younger. The college season is over. They played their conference championship games. And then the NFL used to put on Saturday games.
They still do.
We do. They do. It's week 16.
So it's going to start. Oh, yeah. It's not starting this week.
It's not starting.
But you're right. They could start it sooner.
If they're looking to make money, these are all for a lot of teams now. It's win or forget it. You got no shot. So
it's actually next week.
The last 4 weeks of
that's true. It's the last 3 weeks of playoffs. Well, this Saturday there still is college football. Army Navy is this week.
That's probably why they're not.
And there's still a couple other college games. Yeah,
I don't think the NFL is not going to miss an opportunity to make some money. So December 17th is the first Saturday game, Dallas at Tampa.
Yeah.
And that's a night game.
You know, one other thing about the schedule that they really need to start doing is they need to be able to flex Monday night games. And I think that they, you know, the problem is you don't want to change the entire day of a game, and I get that. But you should be able to do it like 3 weeks in advance. You know what I mean? Like if you gave a buffer zone of like, look, 3 weeks in advance, we're going to move your game to Monday night. I know it screws up travel plans and all that for fans who want to come in, and that sucks, and that's probably why they don't do it. But
well, what do you think of the two Monday night games that they do in the first game of the season? Do you like that or not like that?
I really
this year
don't
like
that.
Couldn't. I mean, I have to get up early, and I didn't see any of the late game.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to wake up, you know, 6, 7 in the morning, you cannot stay up till 1 a.m. on the East Coast to see the end of the first game.
Yeah,
forget about watching the second game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that doesn't mean the end of the second game.
The second game started at like
9 o'clock. Yeah, Eastern time.
Well, you know, 9 o'clock when I was younger, though, 9 o'clock was the start.
That's when it started. I know. Well, that's what I was going to say was if they schedule two games for Monday night, then maybe they could kind of start at the same time, and one could be like on ESPN 2 or something, where you know you put the better game on the better channel. And that's flexible. You know what I mean?
Two Monday night games that like stagger by like an hour. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe something like that, where you where the better time slot gets the better game, and that's flex. That's the flex.
That's
this way, you at least get one. You know, there's a good chance you're going to get one good Monday night game. Like tonight's game was Monday night, Chargers and Jaguars. I mean, who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Yeah, there's a lot of who cares Monday night games for the rest of the year.
Yeah,
I think they got to do something about Monday night. You know, the Sunday night they did great. I love the flex thing. I love the idea that you know you there's a lot of good games on Sundays now, but then Sunday night is like the marquee matchup of the day, and you're always looking forward to that Sunday night game. That's the way it should be, and I like that. All right, so I haven't given my prediction for Cleveland yet. Here's where I worry about the Cleveland Browns. They have a really good pass defense. They have no identity offensively, so the Steelers defense shouldn't have any trouble, you know, causing havoc and creating turnovers. But they have Josh Cribbs. He's a very good special teams returner. I know we talked about on this podcast already how good we are on special teams this year, but Josh Cribbs has a history of, you know, making us pay. I think that Tomlin referred to – he said that we've been dead Indians in his cowboy movie more than once, which I thought was clever. I worry about that. I worry about if this game is stupid and the Browns were to somehow find a way to get an early lead and it's, you know, cold or rainy or whatever. I haven't seen the weather report. But, you know, there are a lot of ways that the Steelers could, you know, lose a stupid game, especially this being the trap game of all trap games. It's a Thursday game that comes 3 days after a big division game against Cincinnati, and it sits in between the only other team who's going to be in the playoffs that the Steelers have left, and that's the 49ers. And it's a road game, too. It's a Monday night road game in San Francisco. This has trap game written all over it. So it will not surprise me if the Steelers struggle, but like I've said all season, just because they struggle doesn't mean that they're going to lose. Hopefully this team can find a way to win. Now, I think it'll probably be closer than we like, maybe something like 20-13. I'm done picking the Steelers to lose this year. I've looked at the schedule up and down, and I think that 12-4 is a nice record for the Steelers to sit at this year. That would involve the Steelers losing one more time. But I look at these games and I say I can't see realistically, barring catastrophic injury to someone like a Mike Wallace or a Ben Roethlisberger or, you know, somebody like the Ike Taylor.
Well, let's say it like this. You know, I mean, as seasons go, you need to get your bad game out of your system. And I think, and I kind of said it with the Kansas City game. If you know, you asked me what I thought of the game, and you were expecting me, Tony, to, you know, to unload on the Steelers because it was really a crappy win.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, you could say a win's a win, and here's how I can accept that as a win if it's the low watermark for the season, because it was a crappy win. The Jacksonville game was a crappy win. But that
we've had some other low watermarks, yeah.
What I'm saying is, you didn't let me get to the second half of the point, which was that comes five games out from the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so if you can start the, you know, the crescendo now, if you got that little scare out of your system, you didn't lose the game, you escaped with a win. They could have lost, but they escaped with a win. And now they, you know, no more foolishness. Now they got to play some serious ball the rest of the way out, then they're looking fine. So I'm going to say this: 13-3, the team is Super Bowl bound. 12-4, they're probably going to get eliminated in the playoffs because they're playing sloppy ball.
Wow!
They still haven't gotten over it. No, they got it. You got to start a run now. This is where you start to run.
No, I totally
remember
agree.
In 2005, the Steelers looked like they were one of the, you know, they were just going to be an 8-8 team maybe. And then they started a run in Chicago with about seven games to go in the season.
Yeah.
So it was a couple games before this point. They got on a roll, and they never lost again.
I'll tell you what, 13-3 would be the best record the Steelers have put up since 15-1, Ben's rookie season. This would be a high watermark for the entire Tomlin era, and most of the Cowher era. You know, 13-3 is a
13-3 is a heady.
Oh, that's.
I mean, they could come out, you know, top seed. In the
top seed. Oh, 13-3 gets you top.
13-3 probably gets you the division, which means the Steelers get the AFC because they're only contending with New England.
Well, it's Houston, really. And Houston, we have the tiebreaker over.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Houston's gonna lose.
Right.
So if New England wins out and the Steelers win out, the Steelers win the AFC, they get top seed.
But I don't think the Steelers need to go 6-0 down the stretch. I think if they went 5-1, they can. That's still hot enough to go into the playoffs, depending on where they lost and how they lost.
But you have to look at who they would be losing to.
Well, they lose to San Francisco.
Yeah.
If they make the trip to San Francisco, that's the only one that you could say, well, you know. But really, San Francisco is the kind of team that I expect. That's not a team that's built to beat the Steelers.
Right.
Right.
I mean, we should be looking at San Francisco as a shutout game defensively. You know, maybe we give up some dopey turnover points or some dopey special teams points.
They're better than you think. I mean, watch their highlights. Their quarterback had some nice throws last week. Surprisingly.
Yeah. No, I think
a team that runs and plays defense is not the kind of team that's going to beat the Steelers.
I agree. Those are teams that are made to build the teams that they should beat, to beat the teams that they should beat. Teams who run, if you run the ball and play defense, you will beat the teams you're supposed to beat, and then you will lose games against teams that have superior talent.
While we're talking about where we're going to end up, let's go through the schedules real quick. I think we can do this quick. You want to do it?
Yeah.
All right, so New England. I'm going to say New England's schedule, and I'm going to say all four games because you just tell me if you think they can lose one of these.
Okay.
At Washington, at Denver, Miami at home, Buffalo at home.
Oh, yeah.
They got to lose one.
There's all kinds of losable games.
I mean, any one of them, you go, well, they'll probably win it. But all four of them, yeah, there's a lot. Miami, Buffalo already stole.
All right, well, we're going to make a prediction here. So let's pick one that they're going to lose.
I think it's got to be Miami. If there's a team right now in the AFC that I don't want to face, it's Miami.
And that's a home game, though.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
All right. Dolphins,
Dolphins are badass, man.
Dude, they're playing out of their mind right now.
So that puts them at 12-4.
Yeah, they're going to be 12-4.
All right. Let's do the Jets. We'll have to do this slow. Kansas City at home.
They'll win that.
All right.
Yeah.
At Philadelphia.
Yeah, they'll probably win that too.
This is Houston.
I don't know.
No, Jets.
This is the Jets.
Oh, the Jets.
Why are we doing the Jets?
The Jets are playing the Eagles?
They're 7-5. I want to see if they're going to make it.
They probably lose.
I kind of think
they lose also. I don't think the Eagles are going to totally give up.
That's Vic's going to be back in that game. Yeah, they're not going to. I don't think they're going to quit on Andy Reid.
Then they have the Giants at home.
No, they lose
Giants
that.
At home, they'll lose that.
And then at Miami.
Oh, they probably lose that too.
They could lose that.
But they're going to be trying so hard at that point because they may have.
I'm going to say they're going to lose one.
They'll be 8-7 going into that point.
Yeah, so they probably win that game.
Finish 9-7.
They finish 9-7.
Yeah. Okay, Baltimore. Listen to this game. Next week's game. Okay, Indianapolis at home.
Trap. I mean, that has trap written all over it. Especially with the way Baltimore plays against bad teams. Yeah, it's very interesting.
And the way Indy played last week.
And the way they took
back.
It to Indy. Yeah. Indy played the Patriots.
Yeah. No, the more intriguing matchup, I think, for Baltimore is the next week.
Okay, so anyway, we're going to give them a win?
Yeah.
Okay, then the next week after that is at San Diego.
That's the one they lose. Because San Diego can still make the playoffs. You know, they're going to win tonight, it looks like. They're up 31-14 over Jacksonville as we record this. You know, Oakland is falling off the map, and Denver still has to play New England and Chicago and some other team.
Okay, so I buy that. And then there are Cleveland at home.
Okay, Cleveland at home, they probably win.
That's a win. And then at Cincinnati in the last game.
So at Cincinnati probably matters more to Cincinnati than it does Baltimore, and I think they might
be 11-4 at the time.
Yeah.
So that's a loss.
I'm giving Baltimore one. They're going
to
lose one of them.
I don't think that game matters to them at that point because they have lost the division to us, and Cincinnati needs that game to make the playoffs. Baltimore has already clinched the fifth seed, I think, at that point.
All right, we'll see. So that's 11-5 or 12-4 if they beat Cincinnati.
I give them 12-4.
Right.
Okay. Then next is Pittsburgh. I'll say these quick. Home Cleveland. At San Francisco, home to St. Louis, at Cleveland.
It would be a disappointment to not win out at this point.
I already said what I thought. If they lose one, they're eliminated in the playoffs. If they can't run those four games, what in the hell makes you think they're going to run three?
Okay, Joe, I'll tell you this though. I mean, obviously, if they win out, they're 13-3, they're the number one seed. But if they don't win out and go 12-4, and they win the division, if Baltimore goes 11-5, we're still the number one seed unless Houston
wins out.
Goes 12-4 also.
Yeah. All right.
Do you want to keep doing this?
Yeah. No. Let's go. I like this.
All right. So that's we're going to put us at 13-3. That's what you want.
13-3. Yes.
All right. Next is Cincinnati. Houston at home. That's next week.
Yeah. See, that's.
They should win that.
Cincinnati should win.
Yeah, we got to give them a win on that. Even though Houston played well, they overachieved against Atlanta, but I think Atlanta underachieved.
Toss up.
Yeah, that is really a toss up game. I'm gonna go Cincinnati.
I'm giving them half a loss there. Go ahead.
Next is at St. Louis.
They'll win that one.
Next is Arizona at home.
They probably win.
And then Baltimore at home. They got three home games left.
Yeah, they're losing two of those.
Yeah, they're probably gonna go. They're gonna go like 9-7.
So they're losing to Baltimore.
They're losing to Baltimore. I don't know. Actually, didn't we say we can't go and say Baltimore
can't do
loses?
Both.
I didn't say.
So they win.
I said Baltimore's gonna lose one.
They win. They win the last game, so they go 10-6, right?
No.
Wait, who wins the last game? Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati wins the last game.
Then they go 11-5. You don't have them losing any games.
What? Wait, no, I had them losing one.
No, they got to lose at least one.
They got Houston at home, at St. Louis, Arizona at home.
Arizona, I had them losing Arizona. I had them losing Arizona at home? Yeah.
Arizona's on a hot streak.
Trap game. I know, Arizona's on a hot streak in this trap game.
All right. So that puts them at 10-6. Yeah. And we don't have
I got them.
The other division teams, we don't have them both losing to each other when they play each other, even though we'd like to see that happen.
Yes.
Joe has Cincinnati winning that. So, or Cincinnati losing.
Yeah, he has them 9-7.
Would Joe?
9-7.
Joe would have them at 9-7. All right. Yeah. All right. Houston. They're currently 9-3.
Right.
Next, at Cincinnati. We already said they'd lose that.
Yeah.
Carolina at home.
Oh, see, that is such a trap game, too. I think they win that one, though.
At Indianapolis.
No, they win that.
Tennessee at home.
They lose that.
Really?
They're 11-5, right?
That puts them at 11-5. All right.
Now we get to the fun ones, the AFC West.
Wait, no, I'm going to do Tennessee also because they're 7-5. So they're New England at home. Wait, that's not right.
No, that's not them.
What I screwed? Did I get the wrong schedule? Do you have it in front of you?
Yeah, Tennessee this week plays the Saints at home.
Okay. Oh, New Orleans. I just spelled it wrong. All right. So that's a loss.
That's a loss.
Oh, yeah.
At Indianapolis, is that next?
That's a win.
Jacksonville at home.
That's a win.
At Houston.
That's a win. They're 10-6.
10-6. That's interesting.
Tennessee.
Okay, now the fun ones. Denver 7-5. They got Chicago at home. Chicago without a quarterback.
Against who?
Against the Broncos.
Oh, this is the Broncos?
Who are
they playing?
They're playing the Bears.
Chicago, who else?
No, well, did they win or lose Chicago?
They're going to win Chicago. Who else?
New England at home.
New England at home.
We already gave them a loss.
Yeah, they lost.
Earlier.
Yeah, they probably lose that.
At Buffalo.
They could beat Buffalo.
Stop. I'm not answering any of these. This is really.
That's a win. And Kansas City at home.
Oh, they'll beat them. They're going to lose one more.
So they go 8-8.
Puts them at
8-8.
No, that puts them at 10-6.
Neither 8-8, but if you could read my thoughts, they went 8-8. Matt, you guys figure out.
Oakland. Oakland's at Green Bay.
Oakland loses out. They have a really tough schedule.
Okay,
could Oakland beat Green Bay?
No.
Not after losing to Miami like that.
Yep.
Yeah, they suck.
Detroit at home.
Yeah, they lose that.
Detroit at home. They might win that one.
No, they're
at Kansas City. That's a win.
They could lose that. Oh, man, they always lose when they go
I don't know, man. They could totally lose that game. But Orton in there. One. Carson Palmer playing as bad as he is.
Division game, they hate each other. Yeah. Anybody can beat anybody in the whole season.
I know, but we got to pick one way or the other. That's how you play this game. You got to make a decision.
I'm saying Kansas City wins that game.
I'm saying they lose. The Kansas City wins.
All right, and then San Diego is – they have San Diego at home.
Lose.
Oh, they got San Diego coming to their house. They could win that. Yeah.
No, I think they lose.
I'd give them 2-2.
You got to say which two, though.
I just told you.
Which ones?
You say they beat San Diego and they beat – you say the team you said they beat.
They lose to Kansas City. They beat San Diego.
And they beat Detroit?
And they beat Detroit. Yeah, Detroit's coming to West, and Detroit's not very good.
I disagree with that.
Well, disagree. There you go.
They're 8-8 to me.
I'm disagreeing also. I'll put them at 8-8.
Yeah, I'll put them at 8-8. All right, now the fun one. What's the fun San Diego.
Oh, I didn't do them.
What do you mean you didn't do them? They're going to make the playoffs.
What's their current record?
What's their record?
Okay, there's 4-7. They have to win out to go
4-7.
Yeah, they have to win out. Okay, they got this week. They got Jacksonville.
Okay,
they
Jags,
win.
They're 5 wins.
Next week they got Buffalo at home.
Probably lose.
Win. Well, you probably lose to Buffalo.
Because they suck.
Buffalo's playing like crap.
So is San Diego.
Okay, they got Baltimore the next week. They win that. We already said that. All right?
We did.
Well, they got to lose to Buffalo.
The next week they got at the Lions. At the Lions. That's a totally winnable game. The Lions are playing a little erratic right now. And then the last week of the season, they get Oakland, which we already said they win. So that puts them at 9-7, a.k.a. they win the West, and Denver and the Tebows.
They're not going to win out.
They do this every year. When they win out.
They're not going to win out.
All right, hopefully,
yeah, we did record.
Hopefully we're recording this so that we can later on in the – oh, you know what? Someone wrote in asking us why we do breaks. I forget when this was.
That's a good question.
And I think we should answer it on the podcast.
All right.
We do breaks for two reasons. There's two reasons we do breaks. And none of those – I'll just say right off the top. None of that has anything to do with the fact that we want to do advertising on this podcast. I don't think any of us have any dreams or illusions of somehow monetizing this podcast. All right? That's not happening. No, the reason that we do breaks is twofold. It started because recording a podcast is hard, especially when three people are in three different locations as we were when we first started doing the podcast. So we did breaks to make sure that the recordings were actually recording. We didn't have to do it over again. Because I can't tell you how many times that first – especially the first year we did the podcast and even into the second year that we recorded twice, a whole podcast twice. So
we broke them up in little segments.
We broke them up – yeah, to make sure that
– to make sure it recorded.
An entire thing.
Yeah, yeah, because that's the worst thing that could happen. And the other reason we do it is because, you know, sometimes we suck and, we just need time to regroup and like not sound like complete morons.
We need to take a time out, a 30 second.
Yeah. A nice time out. Regroup. Don't sound like idiots. Regroup.
But, and there's another reason.
And the,
cause when you're listening to it, don't you just like to relax and listen and like, don't you like that music? Just to kick back.
I like the in and out
music. Breaks? Yeah.
Like, and I'm very disappointed that we haven't had the intro music the last few podcasts.
I know. I am. Well, you know why? Because I'm
getting very lazy.
Is it lazy or is it just that I want to get the podcast out earlier in the week?
How long does it take to put the bumper thing in?
Longer than you would think. It takes about however long the podcast is plus like an hour. But I listen to it like we're chipmunks.
It takes an hour?
Yeah, about an hour.
To add the bumper music?
Well, no, to take out all the weird pauses that we do.
I asked how long to put the intro.
Oh, it's you slide a little thing around.
It's like not even a minute.
I mean, yeah, probably like 5 minutes to put the music in.
5 minutes, yeah.
Then you got to measure it. You got to make sure that when I start, hello, everyone, welcome to Steeler Country, that comes in, you know, at the point when the music is, you know, coming down, so you can hear it right. Look, right. There's some
put the intro what? Music back in.
All right, do we solve the riddle of the AFC? I believe.
I'm gonna give you the results here.
Okay.
Based on what we said, we of course Steeler podcast. Steelers are number one seed at 13-3. The Patriots are 12-4 with the number two seed.
Okay.
Three seed would be Houston at 11-5.
Okay.
Four seed would be Denver at 10-6.
Who said they're going 10-6? Tony said 8-8.
Tony doesn't disagree. Tony
I said
disagrees.
8-8.
All right. So, well, Joe and I said 10-6, and so we went with that. This is the group effort. This is the Steeler Country predictions.
Yeah,
4 weeks out.
Tebow lovers.
And otherwise, you'd have what, San Diego at 9-7. Yeah, so whatever. And then 5 would be Baltimore at 11-5, and 6 would either be Cincinnati or Tennessee at 10-6. I don't know who would win the tiebreaker.
Did you do the ESPN thing? That would tell me what the tiebreaker is. Oh.
Well, I don't have it in front of me.
No good, Mike.
I'm old school. I do it by hand. So anyway, that would have the 6, let's say it's Cincinnati, going to the 3, Houston, and the 4 or the 5, Baltimore, going to Denver.
Tebow beat Baltimore?
That'd be interesting. And then we would play the lowest seed.
Yes.
So
probably that would be
– if Houston won their game, then we'd play the winner of Denver-Baltimore.
Yeah. So we would play either
Baltimore – okay, we got it all figured out.
Either Baltimore or Tebow. I don't know which one I'd want to play more. No, you know what I have to say? And we should end this podcast like this. I cannot wait to play Baltimore a third time. And especially if it's in Baltimore. Can you imagine
– wait, we're ending the podcast?
We talked about that last week, so.
Can you imagine how epic it's going to be, though, that week going into like an AFC championship game? Steelers-Ravens 3. Well,
that wouldn't be an AFC championship. That would be a division
game. It could be. You know what I'm saying? It could very well be an AFC championship game. Yeah. So let's just say it is. Let's just say – because we always play in the championship game for whatever reason. This would be the third time in like the last 4 years that the Steelers and Ravens have played in the playoffs. Yeah, can you
are you just realizing this? Because we talked about this last week. We said that that would be the ultimate. That would be almost better than winning the Super Bowl and knock him out of the playoffs after getting swept by him.
Did I zone out on a part?
I think you did. You need to go back and listen to that. Joe and I were all over it.
Oh, man. We were like basking in it.
All right. Well, that's going to do
it. We have a section of the podcast.
We're like an hour and a half in. Do we really? All right, you know what? You're right.
Everybody's waiting for this.
You're right.
Is this the ref section?
They're waiting for me to announce it.
No, hold on. We have another email.
Okay.
Oh. All right, yeah, let's do an email.
We'll do anything to avoid.
Then I want to do Joe's segment.
My feature segment.
This email's, I don't know. It's Neil again. He says, did anybody predict? He hadn't finished listening to the podcast at this point. So he was wondering if anybody had predicted such a route of the Bengals. And I will say,
I don't remember what our predictions
were. Now, my prediction may not have been a route, but I did say that this would be the week that the hockey stick starts. So
I predicted 20-16, so I was way off. It was not a close game. I think Tony predicted 24-13, maybe?
Yeah, 24-13,
24-10. Joe, I don't remember what you predicted.
I don't either.
I think you predicted a blowout.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
All right, go ahead with T-Bone.
You were closest.
And now the man who's bringing goodness back to greatness. Tim Tebow wins again. The man is 6-1. Holy crap. He comes back. He comes back. They're down the whole game to the Minnesota Vikings.
Hold on. Before you say anything else, the lowly Minnesota Vikings.
Whatever you say, man.
The lowly.
You know what?
The lowly 3 wins.
It was the next game on their schedule.
No, I'm sorry. 2 win Minnesota Vikings.
Listen. It's the next game on their schedule. They go to Minnesota. They're behind the whole game. And what did I have to hear? What did I hear from you and all the Tebow haters? Oh, you know what? They can only score 12 or 13 points. You know, they can't score. Well, they put up 30-something points this week. Tebow threw the ball in the fourth quarter. Okay, through touchdown passes, through long passes to get him in scoring position. You guys that keep hating on this guy, what is your problem? Okay? Here's another thing. I had to hear about, oh man, they just got lucky when they beat the Dolphins. The Dolphins are a lowly team. Hey, guess what? Turns out the Dolphins were the best 0-7 team around. Nobody could beat them anymore.
Dallas beat them, but continue.
I just have to say that running the ball, playing defense, not giving the other team the ball in scoring position, it works.
You just said 5 minutes ago that that can't win in the playoffs.
I didn't say they're going to win the Super Bowl. I'm just saying it wins football games.
Well, what I'm saying to you is,
in the end, you got to have a quarterback that can deliver.
Right. Well, do they have that?
Well, it looks like that.
If Tebow
had to deliver in this game,
Tebow is so good, why can't they win the Super Bowl then? Wait, they play defense.
They're not out of it.
They
yet.
Run the ball. Okay, now they have a quarterback who, according to you, is some kind of superstar.
He needs a little more experience.
So why can't they win a Super Bowl?
Well, the Steelers
okay.
this year.
Tebow was 10 of 15 in passing this week, so that's over 50%, which is good for him. But his passer rating was 149.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Two touchdowns and no interceptions to do it to you. You know what I thought was interesting? I heard Steve Young earlier in the season saying there's just no way Tebow will be successful. This offense, this type of quarterback style is never going to make it in the NFL. No way. I'm pretty sure it was Steve Young who said that, plus many others. Yep. Tonight on the Monday Night Countdown, you heard what he said? He's like, well, I noticed he's standing in the pocket now, and he's getting his reads better, and he's getting better, and it looks like a guy may be able to make it in the NFL. So, and he kind of compared himself, you know, Tebow to himself and others who were running type quarterbacks that had to learn to stand in the pocket and make throws. So now he's kind of changing his story a little bit. You know, six wins will do that to an analyst to say, hey, if he stands in the pocket and learns to do that, he can make it. But
I will say this about Tebow. I'll say this about Tebow. Tebow made some really nice throws this week. I was impressed by Tebow. But, you know, only as impressed as you could be against, you know, a quarterback playing a team who's friggin' two wins, their best player's out, and both their safeties are hurt.
Okay, with all that said, Tony, let me just ask you one question.
Yeah.
Who did you predict to win that game before the game started?
Denver.
You did?
You can go back on the podcast and listen. At first I said, oh, I think they're going to lose this game. Then I realized that what's-his-face was out. Adrian.
They had a lot of defensive backs out, too.
They had all the defensive backs around. Yeah, I mean, the Vikings are decimated with injuries right
but
now.
But it's pretty good when a quarterback can hit the guy wide open. That's good.
That is always a plus when your quarterback can hit a wide open guy. That's always
And that's something that he wasn't doing early in the season.
I'll tell you what, you know, Tebow for Ben straight up right now, guys. Are we looking at that trade?
Here's the thing I heard.
No, thank you.
That in every game that Tebow started, he's had a higher quarterback rating than the opposing quarterback in that game.
Yeah, because the defense is playing out of its mind, and no one wants to talk about that. The real MVP of that team right now is Von Miller.
What's wrong? I mean, what's wrong with that though?
Notice this. Von Miller doesn't play, okay, and they give up 32 points. Von Miller does play, they give up 13, 13, 10, 24, 15.
Okay, but what are the two consistencies there? Von Miller out, they give up a lot of points. Von Miller in, they don't give up very many points. Either way, they score enough points to win with Tebow in.
This is all true, guys. This is all
Who
true.
Pointed out, someone, I think on Mike and Mike pointed out today that you have a star quarterback like Romo, right? He's a, you know, this great quarterback, can whip the ball everywhere. But when it comes fourth quarter, you want to take the ball away from him because you're afraid he's going to lose the game.
Right.
You got a quarterback like Tebow who can't throw the ball, right? But when the game's on the line at the end, you want to give him the ball because he'll win the game for you.
Right. The thing about Tebow, the best thing about Tebow, the thing that nothing never gets said about Tebow, but this is absolutely Tebow's best quality. He does not throw interceptions. That, you know, we talk about, you can't throw the ball, you know, okay, yeah, you can't throw the ball because you could turn the ball, but if you have a quarterback who doesn't put the ball up unless he's sure that it's going to be a complete pass, which Tebow knows if there's, you know, there's a fine line for him and he plays that way, he doesn't make mental errors, that's his best quality, is he doesn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, because but if he throws the ball so badly, how come he hasn't thrown errant, you know, made errant interceptions?
Because teams
must have gotten lucky.
I mean, you saw it in the game. The Vikings played eight in the box all day, and so
what happens when you run 50
when the secondary was out of position, guys were wide open for touchdowns. You know, Tebow was involved with, you know, two play drives and just insanity because when the Vikings were out of position,
you know, Aaron Rodgers won that game on a two play drive. I mean, it was 9 seconds went off the clock
about?
From the time the Giants tied the game. There were 54 seconds.
Holy shit. At 45 are we comparing Tebow to Aaron Rodgers now?
You just told me two-play drive like it's not a good thing, but Aaron Rodgers.
I didn't say it wasn't a good thing.
Two-play drive. Here's the thing to think about. Cam Newton throws for 400 or 500 yards every game, right? And Carolina's like 4-11.
Right. Well, Carolina has statistically the worst defense in football, period, end of story.
Well, I think some of that just had – look, Denver didn't have a stellar defense.
Yes, they did.
Well, why weren't they weren't performing then?
No, because they turned the ball over too much. They turned the ball over too much.
So,
but I think that leads to Joe's point: is that if you play conservative offense, the defense can play better.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for saying bad things.
Changing the
points. I'm not changing any points.
I'm lost.
I don't understand. I'm just pointing out facts. All I'm saying is like Orton threw too many interceptions, but that's I'm not allowed to point that out because that sounds bad for Tebow.
But I want to make a point on that. It's not this isn't like Tebow conservative style. It's just in general in the NFL. If you play a conservative offense and don't turn the ball over and just kind of play field position, your defense is going to play better because they're not strained so much. They're not put in bad situations. And that's what's happening here. I mean, this is – you could call it, you know, the Tebow factor, but it's proof that, hey, you just play a conservative game plan and you'll be in all games. I mean, other guys have done it, like Jeff Fisher and guys like that, but –
It's the Marty Schottenheimer. It's the Marty Schottenheimer philosophy.
And I know you pointed out that you can win regular season games, but you won't win playoff games.
Right.
But, I mean, those turnovers in games are just such killer. Just like the – didn't the Giants, you know, playing – what was it? Green Bay, right? Joe, you were just talking about it. I mean, didn't they have an interception for a touchdown?
Yes.
You know, to Clay Matthews? And, I mean, that's just – I mean, it just breaks your back, man. I mean, you do all that work, and then you just give it away in a second.
Well, when you have an offense that's as efficient as Green Bay is, you force the other team to throw to keep up with you, and then that puts the offense into an uncomfortable position to throw too many times, and it leads to pick six. If only Tebow could throw 50 times a game, maybe their defense.
I don't know. They may not fall that far behind Green Bay. They might hold the ball so long that
Oh, I don't know, man. We'll see. Denver's gonna have to play good teams coming up.
We won't.
They got Chicago coming up. Chicago's not a great team. They have a good defense. I like to see what Tebow does against Chicago. They'll probably win because Caleb.
You know what? If they, that's what they need to do. You know what they need to do against Chicago? They need to do nothing. They need to score about 3 points over three quarters.
Yeah. Well,
because Chicago's offense isn't going to do anything.
Yeah. They need to not kick to Hester too.
Not kick to Hester and don't have a fumble touchdown or an interception touchdown against you. You'll be in the game at the end, and guess what? Your defense will probably take one from Haney.
Well, I mean, the Bears are going to have no Forte, and Haney is their quarterback. There's no way that offense can put up points.
Yeah.
Especially against Denver's defense, yeah.
So just don't give up points when you're on offense, and you'll be fine.
But it'll be interesting because, you know, that should be a tight, low-scoring game. That's the way it seems like it's going to play out. So it'll be interesting to see which, you know, who flinches first as far as, you know, gets uncomfortable with it being such a low-scoring game and wants to put the ball up more and
So, Joe, did you have more to your Tebow segment?
No, that's it. That's all right. I have to say.
Well, that is fantastic. You know, I'm telling you right now, though, if the Steelers were to lose one more game or the Ravens win out, it is, you know, we are potentially on a collision course here on this podcast to what would be like an Armageddon on this podcast. I don't know what would happen to you two if you had to watch Tebow in the playoffs against the Steelers. That would be.
I think the Steelers defense would do fine.
I think so too, and I think our offense would do just fine as well. All right, that's gonna do it for Steeler Country this week. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, go to steelercountry.net. Email us steelercountry@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/steelercountry. We'll see you next week.